This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about figs.
And this episode was suggested by listener Ren.
Thank you, listener Ren. So I did the research for this episode. I don't know if you listeners know this because our show is sometimes so scant with information, but we actually do research and we take turns doing the research for this show. And today, I learned a lot about figs.
Yeah, I'm excited. Can I tell you people like why we're recording remotely and where we are?
Oh,
where I am?
Yeah.
You're in your home as usual. No, usually you're in my home.
That's right.
So I'm on vacation in Calgary. I'd mentioned this on the show a while back. By the time you hear this, I will have been back for a while. But I'm having a great time in Calgary. And I just want to tell everybody that the best thing in Calgary is the black-billed magpie. It is the world's most beautiful bird. And it's like a pest. And they're everywhere. And this morning, I saw it. So it's like a pigeon size and shape of bird, but with a black beak and like white feathers with like green or blue iridescent plumage and an extremely long tail and looks majestic in flight. This morning when I was out on my walk, I saw one swoop down over Kensington Avenue and glide to a stop and start pecking at a pool of vomit. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Wow. Well, you know, gosh, I'm glad to know, or maybe I'm a little disappointed to know that Calgary is a city just like other cities with pools of vomit. I hoped that it would be maybe free of that.
I mean, I haven't seen many, but okay. we're staying like the street I was walking down is like an entertainment sort of nightlife area. So this is probably, I was going to say this is leftover from Saturday night, but no, last night was Sunday night. So I don't know.
Somebody had a rough Sunday night.
I was
at home knitting, meanwhile. So,
yeah, I was at home eating Korean pizza delivery.
Oh, Korean pizza.
It was bulgogi pizza. It was really good.
Yes. Okay, but today we're talking about figs.
Yeah, suggested by listener Ren, who I'm assuming is a bird, who just likes to like fly around and eat figs. And was like, I like these things. I'd like to hear about them on a podcast.
I bet listener Ren has never heard that before.
Okay. Maybe not the fig version of the joke.
Matthew, so, you know, today we're going to be talking about fresh figs. We're going to be talking about dried figs. But we're going to begin by going down memory lane, as we always do, where hopefully there are not pools of vomit.
Yeah, I hope not. You go first.
Okay. So, you know, my dad was a man of many things. You know, he was the endive man. What else was he? He was he discovered Altoids.
He invented Altoids. He's an endive man. And he invented Altoids in like the 1790s, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he also loved figs. My dad loved figs and dates in particular. But I distinctly remember my dad loving figs. And I remember at a certain point, this probably was the 90s, which we're going to talk more about in a minute, because I feel like the 90s ushered in just like a wave of all things fig.
Yeah.
In the American culinary scene. But I remember my dad at some point being able to get a little pint of fresh figs at the grocery store in Oklahoma. And we'll talk a little bit later about why fresh figs are hard to get. I mean, they're perishable. They don't transport well.
They play hard to get.
They play hard to get. But I just remember my dad having one of those like dad ecstasy moments eating a fresh fig. And so, yeah, I always think of figs and my dad.
He was having sort of like a Bacchanalian bacchanal. Like, I mean, figs and dates sound like something someone would get really excited about in ancient Greece, right?
I know. Well, they had Altoids back then.
That's right. I was going to say maybe your dad's history of culinary invention goes back further than we realized. Maybe he was the first, like back in ancient Greece.
I need to find a way to kind of sum up my dad's food tastes. I mean, he was hedonistic for one thing. I mean, he loved foie gras. He loved stuff like that. So, like, you know, rich flavors, but definitely he erred toward like the old continent.
Oh yeah, I think people get the idea.
Like, okay. Great.
Okay, so your dad ate figs back in ancient Greece and more recently.
And I remember when my parents bought the house that they, like sort of the house of their dreams, which they bought when I was like in eighth grade.
In Nichols Hills.
They did some landscaping outside it and they planted a fig tree. And I don't remember ever getting to actually eat figs from this tree. I do remember my mother stressing out about the fact that birds were always eating the figs. It was listener Wren.
Right.
But my parents had this fig tree, and I don't think of figs as growing in Oklahoma, but they did grow quite well, I think, in some people's yards, namely my dad's best friend, Michael Davelman, who I may have spoken about on the show.
I don't remember that name, but maybe.
Oh my God, I cannot believe I haven't talked about Michael Davelman.
Oh no, but so probably you did and I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, then I won't repeat the whole story listeners who do actually pay attention. But anyway, Michael was my dad's friend who he met outside a Skaggs Alpha Beta grocery store because my dad was admiring Michael's Citroën.
Oh, nice.
Do you remember this? You don't remember this?
It sounds vaguely familiar now. Like, I think I'm just not surprised, but I am delighted that your dad was admiring a Citroën.
In a Skaggs Alpha Beta parking lot. That was the grocery store. Well, so Michael was a former like New York cab driver who had fallen in love with a woman from Oklahoma when she got into his cab like years earlier.
Wow.
And he had moved to Oklahoma with her. So it was Michael and Becky. And she was an artist and she would like hand paint t-shirts and things. And they started out selling them at like flea markets and fairs. And it grew into this like massive multi-million dollar company.
What kind? Okay, this does sound familiar. What kinds of t-shirts?
I don't know if the company still exists, but t-shirts with like really cute little like repeated images of animals on
okay.
it. And all different like kinds of clothing. Yes, actually, her name was MC Escher, and she was, anyway, but Matthew, hang on, so by the time
she's like, I'm going upstairs, and like hours later, somehow she was still climbing the stairs.
Okay, hold on, but by the time, so when my dad met,
by the time she got to the top of the stairs,
shut up, okay, when my dad met Michael in the grocery store parking lot, he'd been living in Oklahoma for a while with Becky, and this company was like really big and was basically sustaining the two of them. And he was a writer. He's one of those writers who, you know, you'll never see a thing he writes, but he devotes hours a day to reading and writing and still does, as far as I know. But anyway, Michael and Becky had this beautiful garden in this house that they now owned. And I remember going to their house and it was the first place I ever ate almond paste.
Oh, nice.
Becky made this incredible almond cake. But anyway, they had like absolutely thriving fig trees.
Okay.
And I think this is where my parents got the idea to plant a fig tree. That's the end of that story.
Okay. I have one question about that story. If you know the answer, how long did your dad hang out by the Citroën before Michael showed up? Was he like waiting, like lying in wait to meet the owner of this cool car?
I have no idea, actually. Okay. But do you know what? God, can I just tell you one more like really dear thing? And
please
I think you can imagine this because both of these men were like at that point, Well, Michael was younger than my dad. Michael is younger than my dad was. So maybe Michael was in his late 40s, my dad maybe in his early 60s or late 50s. Mm-hmm. And the two of them would get together and they would walk around the neighborhood together just like talking about like big ideas.
Oh, that's nice. We do that
Isn't
sometimes.
That so dear.
I mean,
anyway, that was my dad's best friend. For the last part of his life.
We usually talk about small ideas, but we've occasionally talked about big ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like if you and I lived in the same neighborhood, we would do this pretty often.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they also were kind of little catty bitches sometimes and would go like walk through houses that were under construction and like critique the houses. And,
sure.
Yeah. Which we would never do because we are not catty like that.
Right. Okay. So my fig memory lane. So I remember eating dried figs as a kid as just like one component of one kind of dried fruit that I would occasionally get. And like my first real fig memories are like from the 90s when suddenly figs became like a hip Mediterranean ingredient and like started appearing everywhere along with balsamic vinegar, prosciutto, caramelized onions, and goat cheese.
That like, is right. That was like right? a holy, not a trinity.
Quintinity.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This was very, is it like a Northern Italian vibe? Is that what it is?
I feel like it's like, a Northern Italian vibe. I never really knew like to what extent this represented anything that was or had ever gone on in Italy. But like, you know, when I think about eating like a pizza with like fig and prosciutto and caramelized onion, that still sounds pretty good. Maybe like a drizzle of balsamic after it comes out of the oven. That sounds good, mm-hmm. right?
This was, you know, one thing that we forgot to add to the Quintinity, mm-hmm. whatever it's called, is arugula.
Of course. Yep.
Arugula.
Yep. Toss some of that on the pizza when it comes out. This is sounding, I might make this.
I mean, there's a reason why it was so trendy and popular. It was delicious.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then sometime in like the 2000s, maybe like early 2010s, there was a guy I knew whose name I'm not going to mention. But, I mean, this was a very nice thing that I'm complaining about, but he had a backyard fig tree and it produced hundreds of figs every year. And he would like try and like foist them off on everyone he knew. And you can't say no when someone's like, can I give you some fruit from my backyard tree? And the figs were good, but he would give me a bag of like 90 of them.
Wait, was this in Seattle?
Yeah, they were green figs.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't really think of like figs growing in Seattle either. And they were good. They were not great, but they were pretty good. And mm-hmm. I would eat like three of them and then throw the rest away.
You know, it's interesting because I actually, after we decided on the topic for this show, a couple days ago when I was out walking around in the neighborhood, I saw a young fig tree with little tiny fruits on it and was like, June, nice. Look, there's a fig tree.
Were they excited?
June is very into fruit. Like June is just an enthusiast when it comes okay. to food. So yes, June was psyched to see these little tiny green figs.
Okay, that's
but
great.
It's interesting to me that, because I, you know, well, we're going to talk more about where figs originated in the Mediterranean, but, you know, it's in much drier, like more arid climates, sandier yeah. soil, things like that. So it's shocking to me that they have done so well throughout the world in all kinds of temperate zones.
Yeah,
including
no, that makes sense.
Seattle.
And I'm not surprised you noticed a fig tree like when we were about to do this episode. It's like that thing how like, you know, when you get a Citroën, suddenly you notice it seems like everyone's driving a Citroën.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. exactly right. So let's talk about what figs are, because I feel like if you know like a little bit about figs, just a little bit, like you might know that there's like a wasp involved.
Right. Oh, we got to talk about that wasp. And one thing I'm so excited about is that finally we're talking about a fruit that's not a berry. I think
you're right. I think yeah. you're right, because I didn't see the word berry at all while I was okay. researching this. So get ready. We're going to throw down some botany here in a minute. We're going to have
I'm
a
so
visit
excited.
From Mr. Botany. We're going to have a visit from Mr. Etymology, and it's going to be great. So, okay. So just, you know, let's start out talking about what this fruit looks like. So it's teardrop shaped. Sometimes it has a green skin, and that may ripen, or it always has a green skin, but sometimes it may ripen to purple or to brown.
Okay.
The flesh inside is soft and reddish. I think of it as being like more rosy the more ripe it is.
Oh, yeah.
And it has tons of little crunchy seeds in it. It's like yes. the original chia seed.
It's like, well, but chia seeds are kind of like mucusy, right?
Well, but don't you think of the inside of a fig as being a little?
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess
I think
it's
a slightly different texture, but yeah, I see what you mean. No, it's like it's like the original Inside Out chia pet.
There you go. And if you have ever like sliced into a fig or maybe broken a fig off of the plant, you may have noticed that the green parts give off this like milky sap, which if you get it on your skin is an irritant.
Is this our winter squash episode, which I think was episode 2, how we like cut into the squash and it was like sweating little droplets that were extremely astringent. Is it something like that?
No. Okay. But I know what you mean.
All right.
So I just want to have a little sidebar here.
Please.
A mental sidbar.
This is like at the judge's bench, like where we're like having a sidebar.
That's exactly right. Step
whatever
over
you do,
here.
Don't let the jury hear what we're about to say.
Okay.
Murder.
Okay. Anyway, Matthew, when I was researching figs, I learned about something called grocer's itch.
That sounds really bad.
Which is unrelated to the milky sap.
Okay.
But I just want to tell everybody what it is because I just had no idea. Like, it sounds like grocers everywhere might suffer occasionally from this. I don't know.
I hope it's occasional and not constant.
Okay. So it is a cutaneous condition characterized by a dermatitis that occurs from coming into contact with a type of fruit mite or house mite.
Okay.
And it usually occurs when people handle dried foods like figs, dates, prunes, grains, some cheeses.
What about jerky? And,
I don't know.
I don't either.
But anyway, I mean, I imagine like maybe if you work the bulk section, if your job is to like refill the bulk foods, I wonder if this is something you know about, like grocer's itch or like the mites that want to live inside these like dried foods.
First of all, I hope this is covered by workers' comp, but also I feel like if I were a grocer, I wouldn't want the word of this to get out that there's a condition called grocer's itch because like then people like, first of all, like might ask me like, hey, do you get grocer's itch? And then also they might like not want to get close to my skin.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. It's like when I once dated a guy who had necrotizing gum tissue.
Oh, yeah. It's that it's actually like seems that. Worse.
Anyway, but that said, Matthew, you know, just as a PSA, guys, I learned from my dentist that, you know, we all have similar bacteria in our mouth. It's just some of us kind of keep it in check and some of us can't.
Yeah.
So I don't think necrotizing grum tissue is catching.
Okay, that's good. Grum.
That said, grocer's itch might be catching. I don't know.
But also, like, I mean, even if it's not catching, like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to have it, and like I feel bad for the person who has it, but also I don't want to see it or kiss it, right?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Lori, you've been warned. Okay. Okay, let's go back to talking about what this fruit actually is, because this is really cool. So the fruit of the fig tree is referred to as a syconium. It's syconium.
That sounds like... Wow. Like, it sounds like something from like a sci-fi, like cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic novel.
A syconium is a fleshy, hollow receptacle with lots of tiny ovaries on the inside surface. So, I mean, exactly what a fig is, basically. So, in other words, a syconium contains like hundreds to thousands of highly simplified little flowers or florets all over its inner surface. So, so that's what a fig fruit is. But botanically, it's an infructescence, which is a type of multiple fruit. And isn't that what a pineapple is too?
Sure. Yeah, it's like a whole bunch of fruit smushed together.
Yes. Yes. Kind of.
Now, however, a pineapple I think is a berry.
It is.
Don't double check me on that. But yeah.
Oh dear. Okay, so the syconium, here, we're back to talking about the fig, is closed off from most organisms.
Mm-hmm.
It's sealed off.
Sometimes I feel that way too.
Yeah, everybody does.
Okay.
You know, it's okay. As long as you keep a small opening.
Okay, I'll try.
That preferably is like fringed with some like little scale type leaves. So that only the ones you want can enter.
All right.
And, you know, recently we watched a horror movie called Let the Right One In.
Oh, I've heard of that, but I haven't seen it because horror movies are too scary for me.
So basically, the Sekonium is designed to let the right one in. And the right one here is a specialized type of wasp.
Oh,
called
yeah.
A fig wasp. Okay. So the fig wasp is able to enter through that little opening at the, you know, the rounded end of the teardrop shaped Sekonium. And what it does is it pollinates the tiny little flowers on the inside.
Yeah.
After which each little fertilized ovary develops into a seed.
Okay.
So at maturity, these little seeds, which are actually like single-seeded fruits, line the inside of the fig. So yes, it is a receptacle filled with little tiny fruits.
Okay, a couple things. So first of all, I imagine, you know, this is a symbiotic relationship, right? And there must be like not just like one kind of fig wasp, but lots of different kinds, like different ones for each species of fig, probably, right?
That would make sense. That would make sense. But here's the other thing, which we're going to get into, is that not all figs require this kind of pollination.
Okay.
So there are three different types. We're not going to go deep in this. There's a persistent or common type fig, and then there is a caduceus fig.
Oh.
And yeah, and then there's one that's like
a fig that's also a pharmacist?
That's right.
Okay.
I may be pronouncing it wrong.
Anyway, I'm not sure. I've never seen this word before. What does it mean?
Hold on. So okay. The persistent or common type fig, so Black Mission is one of these types. It has all female flowers on the inside of the Sekonium, and it does not require pollination for fruiting. So the fruit can develop through parthenocarpic means. Do you know what that means?
I do know what that means. So parthenocarpy, it's like the plant equivalent of parthenogenesis. So it's when the ovary of the plant develops into a fruit without requiring fertilization.
Okay.
Oh, this is Mr. Botany speaking, by the way.
Oh.
And it is something that is relatively uncommon in nature, but relatively common in commercial fruit production because it produces seedless fruits. And also
like seedless watermelons.
Right. It also doesn't require spending money on pollination. I don't think all seedless fruits are produced through this process, but any fruit produced through this process is a seedless fruit.
Okay.
So like when you're eating
Watermelons are definitely made this way.
Okay. So when you're eating a Black Mission fig, like the crunchy seeds in there are like aborted seeds. They are not quite fully developed seeds because they were never pollinated, fertilized.
Well, no, those...
Right?
I think the seeds happen after fertilization. Because here's the thing. So you've got these little flowers in there. Figure like little florets, okay? This is pre-fertilization. Let's talk like in general, if we're talking about a fig that needs to be fertilized, okay? You've got these little flowers in there. They've got these little ovaries. And when the fig wasp or the pollinator comes in and pollinates them, those little ovaries develop into a seed.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right for a caducous fig.
Yes. But
I was talking about like a common type fig.
Okay, so for those, they develop the seed without needing to be pollinated.
Right. So I don't know if technically that is not a seed.
Oh, so it's like an aborted little ovary type thing?
The ovary develops into a fruit, but it can't produce seeds because it hasn't been fertilized. So it produces like things that have like parts of a seed, but not like the embryo.
Oh, maybe like some kind of carp, an endocarp or something.
It definitely
has crunchy.
Some kind of carp, like a koi or.
I hope it's not one of those invasive carp.
Oh, yeah.
Can you even imagine?
That
would be terrible. Imagine you bite into a fig and invasive carp come out of it.
Well, we should talk about that because, like, you know, people always ask, like, you know, people always come up to us and ask, like, is there a wasp in my fig? And the answer is sort of sometimes.
I don't know of anybody who's ever like bitten into a fresh fig and found a wasp in there. But with a Black Mission fig, if you're buying Black Mission figs, I think you can feel pretty confident that you're never going to find a wasp in there.
Because a wasp never went in there.
That's right. That particular type does not require wasps, okay? On the other hand, these caducus, am I pronouncing this right, do you
well,
think?
Well, I mean, based on the spelling, I like caducus.
Okay. So those kinds of figs, for instance, a Smyrna fig or a Kalmyrna fig, which yep. we'll talk about in a minute, as far as I understand, those do require cross-pollination by a wasp. So...
Yeah, so what happens is the wasp crawls in there, like pollinates the fig and dies, and then the fig produces an enzyme, ficin, that dissolves the dead wasp long before you eat the fig. And so there's been like a debate on like whether wasp-pollinated figs are vegan for this reason, and I noticed that the Vegan Society of the UK says, yes, it's fine. This is the result of like a
That's
mutualistic
so
relationship, and the wasp is completely dissolved by the time you get the fig in your mouth.
Do you know what I find really especially interesting about this is that the Wikipedia entry, like I looked at multiple different Wikipedia entries going from, you know, like one to another to sure. get all this information. And none of them said what happened to the wasp. So I wonder,
I guess
if
they
like,
were embarrassed to tell you.
I wonder if it's like bad PR for figs or something. And like they try to, maybe somebody keeps going in each day and adding, you know, the end of the wasp story to the Wikipedia and somebody
be, yeah.
else comes and erases it.
Oh, yeah. But now, like, they can't erase our podcast. Finally, the truth will come out. But
that's
like,
right.
like how the wasp cannot come out of the fig.
That's right. Okay, but wait. So what's in it for the wasp?
Oh, okay. So this is calling on, like, stuff I remember from, like, biology class many, many, many years ago. But figs are dioecious, right? So there are
right.
figs with male parts and figs with female parts.
Yep.
And the fig wasp wants to get into a male fig because that's where it can lay its eggs, you know, crawls in, it lays its eggs. The male and female wasps mate inside the fig and like then the females bore their way out. And the male fig wasp is just like a little adjunct.
This is so much more information than I found. Wow, Matthew, wait a minute. So they're basically using it as like a little love nest.
Right. And the male figs are not edible to us at least. So they're little stubby guys.
Okay. Okay.
The fig tree wants to lure the wasp into a female fig where that it will pollinate.
Okay.
This is not good for the wasp because the wasp just crawls in and dies.
Got it. Okay. But the wasp has already used the male figs to propagate itself.
Not this wasp. This wasp hit a dead end.
Okay, but what about the eggs that were laid somewhere
right,
else?
So this wasp was born in a male fig, came out, went and like, oh, I need to go like find a fig and lay my eggs there. I'm going to go into this one. Uh-oh, it's a female fig. I'm screwed.
Okay.
Why is the female fig like not a good environment for the wasp to like hatch its eggs? I don't know.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Well, this is so interesting. I'm really glad that Mr. Botany showed up to tell us these things.
Oh, yeah. This has been Mr. Botany. Bye.
So, Matthew, wait a minute. If I'm eating a Black Mission fig, I can feel quite confident that there was never a wasp in there.
Right. And if you're
Whereas if I'm eating a Smyrna fig or a Kalmyrna, which we'll get to in just a minute, maybe.
Mm-hmm. You can be confident that there was a wasp in there.
Okay, great. Good to know. Wasp or no wasp? That's our new game.
Okay. Personally, I always hope for no wasp, not in the fig context, but just like I got stung by a yellow jacket a couple years ago and it sucked. Lori got stung by one this year and it sucked.
Where did Lori get stung? I mean, where did she come into contact with the yellow jacket?
Well, it was outdoors. I know that. I don't remember, but like it stung her on her arm and it got all swollen.
This is so interesting because you guys, you spend so much less time outdoors than I do in the summer.
That's true.
I encounter tons of yellow jackets. I mean, I went camping this summer in a place that was swarming with yellow jackets and mosquitoes. And so far, knock on wood, this is me knocking on wood, I have not yet been stung, but I feel like I'm constantly trying to evade a yellow jacket sting.
So I mentioned that I recently went to Joshua Tree National Park, right? Went on a hike, mm-hmm. and there was like a guide, like a park ranger who like gave us a little spiel before, like when you're halfway done with your water, turn back. and also that the park is full of rattlesnakes. And I will never forget what she said, which was like, you know, when you imagine someone getting bitten by a rattlesnake, you imagine them getting bitten on the ankle, right? Well, that's not how it usually happens. Usually when someone gets bitten, it's because they sit down on a nice looking rock and they put their hand down and the snake bites them on the hand. I did not see anyone sit down on a rock on this whole hike. We were all terrified.
Oh my God. So I've gone to Joshua Tree maybe two or three times mm-hmm. and have never received this warning.
Well,
and
now
have
you
sat
have.
On rocks and eaten lunch, and I've like gone scrambling on the rocks and put
oh, yeah,
my
no,
hands
we went scrambling
in all kinds
on
of
the
weird
rocks.
Crevices.
Like, yeah.
And oh
no,
my God.
I love
God.
Putting my hands in weird crevices. It's one of my favorite things.
Me too.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary tastes with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Back to figs.
Okay.
So because ripe figs, of course, don't, you know, because they're really like delicate, they don't transport well. And so most commercial fig production is in like dried and processed forms of figs.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten a moldy fig like at the bottom of a little pint of figs. Not pleasant.
That sounds like an insult, like you moldy fig.
Yeah, or like a British pub with an ironic name, like the Moldy yeah. Fig. Or wasn't the Moldy Peaches a band?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay. Glad we established that.
Anyway, so the world's largest producers of figs, you might guess, are in the Mediterranean area, which is the area of the world that figs are native to.
Okay.
So as of a few years ago, I don't have up-to-date data, Matthew, but as of 2018, the world's largest producers of figs were Turkey, Egypt, Morocco, and Algeria.
Okay, that makes sense.
And this totally makes sense because, yeah, figs are native to the Mediterranean and Western Asia, and they have been cultivated there since ancient times. In fact, Matthew, the edible fig was one of the first plants cultivated by humans.
Wow. Should we talk about fig leaves? Like why that you use them to cover your junk if you're in a Garden of Eden type of arrangement?
Figs, in part because of how ancient they are and that they are native to a part of the world where like a lot of religions have holy
sure.
places. Figs are tied up in a lot of they're tied up in like Islam, Christianity. I'm not sure about Judaism, but they show up in many religious texts and histories.
Yeah.
And, you know, supposedly in the Garden of Eden, after they ate the fruit from the serpent and then they noticed that they were naked and felt shame, they covered themselves with fig leaves.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
That definitely answers my question, yeah. Okay, was the fruit in the Garden of Eden a fig? I know this is a thing that can't actually be answered.
I think they talk about it as being an apple, but it would make more sense if it were a fig.
Okay. Let's
say
it is.
Don't they talk about it as an apple?
Oh, definitely. But then, like, you were like, you know, but actually, like, you know, historically, it was probably
a fig.
A fig or an apricot or something. I don't know.
You know, if there's one thing we are known for, it's our religious scholarship.
Yes.
So we are the authorities on
you know,
this, clearly.
You know who we need to call upon here? Mr. Theology.
We do. Oh, what a shame. He's out for the day.
Too bad.
He's on a field trip.
Office hours for Mr. Theology are on Wednesdays, and our show comes out on Thursdays.
Okay. Well, everybody, good thing I'm here with my second-rate knowledge.
Oh, great.
So this is pretty cool. So, I mean, like, thinking about how long humans have been cultivating figs, pretty cool. So fossilized figs were once found in, in the excavation of a Neolithic village in Jordan, dating back to the 9000s BC. So
wow.
That means that fig cultivation predates the domestication of wheat, barley and legumes, and according to some, maybe the first like known instance of agriculture, like humans intentionally growing and cultivating certain plants.
Okay, I know I'm supposed to be Mr. Etymology, but I have an etymology question for you that you may or may not be able to answer. Why is it called Neolithic? Why is it new? Like, why isn't it just lithic?
Because it's probably in contrast to Paleolithic, right?
Oh, like, of course. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like,
I think it's all relative.
It's all relative. Yeah. Good answer.
It's all relative.
All right. You got to be plus on the test.
Thank you. Anyway, figs were widespread in ancient Greece, as you might guess. Aristotle wrote about their cultivation. He also wrote about fig wasps.
So did your dad and his friend
David. So did my dad.
Was his friend David?
Michael. Michael. Yep. Figs were also like a common food source for ancient Romans. Pliny the Elder wrote about figs.
Hell yeah.
Here's a fun fact. Rome's first emperor, Augustus, was reputed to have been poisoned with figs from his own garden that his wife had smeared with poison.
Okay. And that's why they're called Smyrna figs.
He must have been a terrible husband.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Those were both good jokes at exactly the same time. Remote recording is awesome.
Okay. Anyway, Matthew, would Mr. Etymology like to make a visit? Because we're not going to talk about Neolithic anymore, but we're now going to talk a little bit about where the word fig comes from. It's time for Mr. Etymology.
Hi, it's me, Mr. Etymology. The word fig was first recorded in English in the 1200s, and it comes from the old French figue, itself from Occitan or Provençal, figa, from the Romance fica, from classical Latin ficus, meaning fig or fig tree. In Italian, figs are fico, derived directly from the Latin. What do you think of that?
There we go. I think that's great. Thank you, Mr. Etymology.
Is a ficus tree like a type of ornamental fig tree?
Yes. So here's the thing. So figs are grown throughout the temperate world now, both for the fruit and as an ornamental plant. And so the genus Ficus has something like 800 different plant species in it, of which Ficus carica, which is the tree that produces the edible fruit that we know as the fig, is just one.
Okay. That makes sense.
So anyway, what we think of as a fig tree, like that grows the edible fruit, has a really distinctive look to it. It's got these big leaves with 3 to 5 like deep lobes. Lobes. Anyway, but I have a fiddle leaf fig tree upstairs in my living room.
What does that mean?
Well, so it's the leaves are shaped like the body of a violin.
Okay, I'm looking this up.
But the interesting thing is, Matthew, if you cut off one of the leaves or injure the plant, that milky sap comes out.
Okay. I'm looking at a picture of this fiddly fig, and people have amazing imaginations to claim that this leaf looks like the body of a violin.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
Fiddle leaf fig.
This just looks like a regular leaf to me.
No. These pictures are not doing it justice.
Okay.
They look a bit teardrop shaped.
Okay.
In these pictures. But anyway, whatever. Shut up, Matthew. All right. Moving right along. So, you know, I feel like, especially in the 90s when we were all getting into figs.
Yep.
I tend to think of it as like a that's right.
Like,
well, as everyone knows, there is a stage in human development that is the fig wasp stage.
Yeah.
And back in the 90s, that's when you and I were passing through that stage.
Yeah. We were like, I was like, hey, Molly, I'm really getting into figs lately. And you were like, yeah, me too.
And I was like, with goat cheese and balsamic?
And I was like, no, literally.
Just to lay my eggs.
Yeah. It was a good time.
Anyway, I remember thinking of figs as being kind of synonymous with like California food.
Very much so.
And part of this is that figs grow really well in California. And
there is
a pretty long history of this, at least that predates the founding of the U.S. So when Spanish missionaries led by Junipero Serra, when they came to California, or at least they brought figs to California in 1769.
Okay.
And the variety they cultivated is the Mission variety, which is still popular. This is from Wikipedia. As the population of California grew, especially after the gold rush, a number of other cultivars were brought there from the East Coast of the U.S. and from France and England. By the end of the 19th century, it became apparent that California had the potential for being an ideal fig-producing state because of its Mediterranean climate and its latitude of 38 degrees, which lines up San Francisco with Izmir, Turkey.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I think I would have guessed that like San Francisco is like well north of Turkey, but no.
I would have guessed so too, because I think of it as being like, I think we also often hear the Bay Area being compared to like wine regions in France.
Yeah.
Or maybe wine regions in Italy or something.
But maybe we just don't know geography. You know who we should call upon?
Mr. Geography.
Yeah, that's right.
It's too bad. His office hours aren't till tomorrow though, okay. Friday.
Fine.
Anyway, a guy named G.P. Rixford. I feel
like there's like not a lot of gender diversity among the experts that we call on for this show. Maybe we need to work on that.
True. Why don't we have like Ms. Theology?
Yeah. Why not?
Or like mix geography. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get some new experts.
Okay. I'm not done. A guy named, I think a guy, or a person named G.P. Rixford.
Okay.
First brought Smyrna figs to California in 1880. The most popular cultivar of the Smyrna type fig. So again, this is a type that does require a fig wasp for pollination. The most popular cultivar of the Smyrna type fig is Calimyrna, being a name that combines California and Smyrna. The cultivar, however, is not one that was produced by a breeding program and instead is from one of the cuttings brought to California in the latter part of the 19th century. It's identical to a cultivar that's been grown in Turkey for centuries. Ends all my information.
I have a question and an observation. My question is it Calimyrna, like C-A-L-M, or is it Calimyrna? Because I thought it was Calimyrna.
I've always pronounced it Calimyrna, but Wikipedia spells it Calimyrna. Let's look this up.
Okay,
I've always thought it was Calimyrna.
No, I think we're wrong, and it's Calimyrna. Also, Google suggests that maybe I meant chlamydia.
Oh, well, you might have.
Yeah. The other thing is, speaking of ways to transmit chlamydia, here in Calgary, there are a couple of light rail train lines, and like train lines in many places, it says on the front of the train what like the terminal destination of the train is, and one of them terminates at 69th Street, and it doesn't say 69th Street, it says 69th Street. So every time I see that, I'm like, wife of the show, Lori, and I'm like, I'm taking the train to 69th Street, and to she did laugh the first time, I'm pleased to report.
Good. Okay. Okay, so Matthew, you know what? This episode has already gotten way too long. Let's just talk about how we eat figs.
Okay, I don't eat figs very often, but okay, can I bring out my prop here?
Please.
I've got here the Dick Taylor Craft Chocolate, 72% dark with black fig. I bought it at a place called Luke's Drug Mart in Bridgeland, Calgary, which is this is the most hipster thing I've ever encountered in my life. It is a pharmacy, grocery store, vinyl record store, and coffee shop. And of course, they also sell fancy chocolate. I think this chocolate bar was $18.
Are you kidding?
$8 Canadian dollars. And it's 72% Madagascar dark chocolate with black figs. So there's like little chunks of dried black mission figs stuck to the back of this chocolate bar. And I'm going to try some now.
Great. Mm. Can you taste the fig?
It's a good chocolate.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can taste the fig. It's got like little like knobbly bits that like remain in your mouth after you've finished like swallowing the chocolate.
Which I don't know if that's ideal. The fig experience.
And yet, now that the chocolate has dissolved and I'm like chewing on these little nubbles, now I'm getting a little bit of fig flavor. I think this is a pretty good bar.
Okay, that sounds pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know, another thing that I think everybody has encountered at some point in their lives, or at least I hope they have encountered, is a fig Newton, which is, I feel like every kid, at least of our generation, grew up knowing that fig Newtons existed, and yet none of us probably ever thought about what an actual fig was.
No, I don't think so.
Or the fact that we were eating these weird little crunchy dried niblet bits.
I think we did an episode where we ate fig Newtons, like a packaged cookie episode or something. They're so good. When I was a kid, like my mom would buy them at like the natural food store, and they weren't fig Newton brand, and we called them fig bars. And so they had some more like whole grain to the wrapper. Those were pretty good too. But then like when I got my hands on like actual brand name Fig Dudes, I was like, oh, this is like a cookie.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Do you ever just buy dried figs for eating? Like any other dried fruit?
The most recent time I've done that was when we did the dried fruit episode a couple months ago. So no. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Yeah, I don't tend to either. I think of them most often coming shaped into like a little disc, like neatly nestled around one another. And they're usually light colored in that form.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like I do
when
know
they
what
come in like a little hockey puck shape. Mm-hmm. And I think of those as being maybe Smyrna figs or some like,
I think you're right.
Like Calimirna figs. Although you can also get like a black fig that is dried. But a dried fig just doesn't quite do it for me the same way that other fruits do.
When I get a good Black Mission fig, like I want to eat like 10 of those and then I'm good for like till next year probably. Mm-hmm. That's my relationship with figs. I don't think about them a lot. Then sometimes they'll like come across my plate. Then I like reach down with my big like beefy hand and just mm-hmm. like shove them all in my mouth in a bacchanal. Then I go back to being a Mr. Etymology.
Okay, figs. It's interesting. They have this real like aura of delicacy to
them. Also, they're considered like a sexy fruit, right? Like partly I think because of the way they look.
I think that you know they kind of look like a big giant ovary. We don't think about the fact that they're actually just filled with ovaries.
Yeah, I mean I think about it.
But they look like I picture an ovary looking. I mean picture my own ovaries looking like that. Like once a month, like they just pop out one of those little crunchy seeds.
One of those little wasps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, the flavor of a fresh fig is so subtle but so delicious when you get a perfectly ripe one. If you were to sit me down and be like, Molly, I have prepared for you a platter of delicacies here. This happens to me all the time. It's going to happen to me tonight. I just know it.
Yes.
I'm going to be the one who has to prepare it and pay for it.
No, I was going to say, it's usually you like cry out, like prepare me my platter of delicacies. This is kind of your catchphrase. Oh no. Just as I said that, Molly froze up. I don't know I think it's my internet. Okay. I think we're back.
Okay. I missed everything you said, but as long as it was funny, we can go on.
Okay, great.
Okay. Anyway, you know, Matthew, I would be really pumped to sit down in front of a platter that had some like fresh figs, maybe a little pot of honey that I could drizzle mm-hmm. onto things, some goat cheese, maybe even a little bit of kind of slightly reduced balsamic. Like mm-hmm. honey and figs, even though figs are sweet, there's something about the flavor of honey. I'm salivating just thinking mm-hmm. about it. The flavor of honey with figs is really wonderful.
You know what this reminds me? It reminds me of a thing I need to do, which is not really fig related. But the other night, I'm just going to keep calling out places in Calgary. Hang on, I'm going to finish chewing first.
Hey, this episode, of course, is coming out right after the Christmas holidays.
And oh, yeah.
Did any of you have figgy pudding? I mean, seriously, go to our Reddit and tell us if you had figgy pudding. Mm-hmm. We want to know.
Reddit.com/r/everything-spilled-milk. Yeah, what is figgy pudding? I think like I've read an article like 7 times, like, you know, did you know that this is what figgy pudding really is? And maybe it doesn't even have figs in it. And then I forgot again.
Yeah, me too.
The other night, we ordered a cheese and charcuterie platter from a place called Peasant Cheese in Kensington, Calgary. And it was very good and had like a huge array of like accompaniments for the 3 cheeses and 3 meats. And so there were like some dried cherries and like various pickles. There were like pickled Brussels sprouts that were a little spicy and really good. And then there was this thing that looked like maybe some sort of like pickled citrus or like dried citrus peel, but didn't taste like citrus. And I have not the slightest idea what it was.
Interesting.
Have you had an experience any time like recently where you ate something and you're like, this is good. I don't know what it is and I might never find out. I might have to call them.
Yeah, I think you should find out. I have not had that experience recently, but I think it's because, and Ash and I were talking about this the other day, that we have so gotten out of the habit of going to restaurants like we did before the pandemic.
Oh, sure. And we brought this platter home.
Yeah. It's just, I think some of it is financial. Some of it is definitely like we are just out of the habit of being like, hey, let's do something special and go out to dinner. Like now it's like, hey, I'm tired. Let's get some Thai food. takeout.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That sounds depressing, but I don't mean it that way.
No, no. Listeners, I know, are very excited to find out what this dried thing was. And I'll let them know on a future episode if I remember to call this cheese place.
Great. Okay, Matthew, I think we need to head into segments.
I think we do. This could be our longest episode.
This could be our most boring informational visitor episode.
No, no. We're like wasps, like stinging your brain with little injections of knowledge. Yep.
Matthew, do we have any spilled mail?
We sure do. This mail is from listener Tessa, who writes, "Before my parents met, the way in which ketchup was applied to one's hot dog was never questioned. My mother puts ketchup directly on her hot dog bun. Conversely, my father dips his hot dog into the ketchup on his plate. Once they started dating, their condiment worldviews collided, and they realized that they had assumed that there wasn't any other way. This only applies specifically to ketchup, ostensibly, and not other sauces or condiments. My question is, do you have food habits that didn't become apparent or deemed strange until you met your partners? Are there things you do differently and think that the rest of the world is doing incorrectly? And do you apply ketchup or other condiments directly, or are you a dipper?" Okay, so let's start with the first part of the question is, like, do you have any food habits that you didn't realize were, like, individual to you, unique to you and no other human on earth until you met your partner or me?
Gosh, I'm sure there must be something. I can't think of anything right now. Do you have something? Not really.
Like, I've been with my romantic partner and my comedy partner for so long at this point that I don't remember back that far.
I think that for me, it's a little bit tricky, too, because I have had I was with Brandon for, we were together for 10 years. And with Ash, well, we just celebrated our 6th anniversary of dating. Isn't it crazy that Ash and I have now already been together 6 years? So I've had these two fairly long partnerships. And it's hard for me to remember, like, what I did before I met Brandon. Like, how many of the habits that I had coming out of my relationship with Brandon did I have going into it? Like, especially as food goes, because we were both really interested in food. I have no idea. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the fact that I don't really like most condiments is weird. And, like, anyone I eat with probably thinks that's weird. So, yeah. So we're totally normal and we don't have any weird habits is what we're saying.
That's exactly right. That's what we're saying. Matthew, are there any things that you do and you think the rest of the world is doing it wrong the way that the rest of the world is doing it?
No, because I don't want to, like, yuck anyone's yum. And, like, if everyone seems to be doing something differently, like, I'm definitely the weird one.
You know what? It occurs to me, Matthew. Do you remember when we, on one of our episodes, we talked about how much we both like eating fruit when it's chilled?
Yeah, that is true. As opposed to room temperature. Super popular, it seems like.
Yeah, people wrote in and they were just astounded. I would say that that is something that you and I do that the rest of the world does differently. And
that's
it's not
true.
I don't think other people are doing it wrong. I just prefer cold
fruit. No, it's just a thing that makes us better than other people.
That's right. Okay, now, but to answer the question about ketchup, I definitely apply the ketchup to the hot dog. I don't apply it to the bun, though. I apply it onto the hot dog.
I thought that was a kind of an interesting way of expressing that.
Yeah, no, it goes on to the dog.
Yeah, no, like I don't usually put a sauce on a hot dog. I prefer to tuck some pickled jalapenos in there and maybe some sauerkraut, but I don't like ketchup or mustard, as you know, and still haven't made much progress with that. But if I'm going to put, like, barbecue sauce on a burger, like, I'm going to put it on the burger patty and then kind of smoosh it down with the bun. So, like, yeah, mm-hmm. like, and if I'm putting hot sauce on something, I'm doing like a shaking hot sauce motion here. Mm-hmm. But, like, it depends on the food, I guess, because, like, I'm not going to, like, put a sauce on fries. I'm going to dip the fries in the sauce.
I think that it depends on whether the thing is, like, I think of a condiment as being something that goes on the food,
okay.
whereas a dip is something that you dip into. For instance,
sauces can serve both functions.
Sure, sure. But, like, for instance, if you get fresh rolls at, like, a Thai restaurant, and maybe they come with a peanut sauce or something, that peanut sauce I'm always going to dip into because it is too thick to be pourable. It's meant to be a dip.
But yeah, I'm thinking mostly about barbecue sauce, which is like if you come up to me on the street, What was it people were going to come up to us on the street to ask earlier? I don't remember. But if you come up to me on the street and I seem like lost in thought, I'm probably thinking about barbecue sauce. We went to a barbecue place where there were like three sauces. People don't want to hear any more about things I did in Calgary 3 months ago.
I mean, I'm already bored.
I know. I'm bored with myself.
Okay.
Anyway, so like barbecue sauce.
But you're going to go on.
I love dipping, but this isn't the thing that happened in Calgary. Like, I love dipping fries in barbecue sauce. I also love pouring barbecue sauce on a burger. It can do both of those things.
Okay. Well, thank you, listener Tessa, for inviting us to think about this. This was a really important conversation.
And thank you for inviting us over for hot dogs. We'll be right there.
Matthew, do you have a now but wow?
I do. I have a now but wow that I'm really excited to share. It is a Substack newsletter by Tu Huang Ha called The Weekly Grief. And I subscribed to it because I kind of had searched Substack or followed a recommended newsletter from someone else because she lives in and writes about Japan. But she's just like a wildly great and creative and just like prose on fire kind of writer whose mind goes all kinds of places. And like the most recent piece was about finally learning her blood type in Japan, which is a place that has a lot of superstition around blood types and what they mean for your personality. And Ha is definitely skeptical of this sort of thing, but also is not going to like write an essay that's as simple as like, you know, I am skeptical of that there's a relationship between blood type and personality. It went a lot more interesting places than just like skepticism or belief. And I find her writing really transporting, and just like spending time with her language is a privilege.
I want to clarify that the piece about blood type, that would have been the most recent piece at the time of us recording this.
Oh, right. Which is, we're recording this in October and it's now like the end of 2022. So probably there have been like other great newsletters since then. So absolutely, like, subscribe and pay. This is a writer very much worth your time. Weekly Grief. That's weeklygrief.substack.com.
Oh, awesome. I am pulling it up on my computer as we speak.
Her writing's so good.
Oh, cool. Okay. Excellent. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella, and she is probably dying over how long this episode is and how much we now know about your trip to Calgary.
Right.
But, we know so much more than we wanted to.
Is probably taking solace in the fact that she is paid by the hour.
That's true.
My co-host Molly also has a Substack newsletter called I've Got a Feeling. It's at mollyweisenberg.substack.com. Also very good.
Thank you. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know who appeared in an interview on Molly's newsletter recently?
You did, Matthew.
Yeah.
Yes, we had a wonderful conversation that I think people really enjoyed. So
I think
thanks
so
for that,
too.
Matthew.
And like, yeah, it was like a walk with like your dad and his friend Michael talking about big topics. Except we were like sitting on opposite ends of a wire talking about big topics.
That's right. You can chat with other Spilled Milk listeners on our Reddit. That's reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
And until next time, we're going to be crawling into your ears like a fig wasp and just doing
our thing. That's right. And we're just going to get dissolved and stay in there. So hi, everybody. It's us.
We've been in there for like 13 years now.
It's been great.
I'm Matthew Hamster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
We can't make people listen to our podcast, you know.
But wish we could.
Yes. Yeah. No, if we could, we would. If we had coercive means at our disposal.
I mean, if there were a way to use our powers for evil, I might occasionally.
We would be doing that by now.
We just haven't quite cracked the code.
This Klimt painting behind me would be very much at home in an evil lair.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I wish all of our listeners could see this painting that's behind my head.
Like, Matthew, you could probably Google like famous Klimt paintings and you could find out which one it is, and then the listeners would know because you would tell them.
We'll put it in the show notes. I'm gonna Google right now. Famous Klimt paintings. Naked Lady. It's called Water Serpents 2. Oh.
Wow.
Oh, this is only part of the painting. Okay. Oh. We're changing the, all right. I did find the painting and we're now, the topic of our episode is going to be paintings.
Water serpents?
Water serpents.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.